Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. When was the last time you had a conversation about sex and intimacy? The partner or potential partner? I really enjoyed this conversation with Chloe, and the recurring theme is communication, with a healthy dose of curiosity thrown in. How does that sit with you? From a generation where, for most of us, sex and money were absolutely taboo subjects, and those are hurdles not easily overcome. Chloe Mascord is no stranger to issues around sex, intimacy, and pleasure. She's an intimacy expert on a mission to help women break free from performative intimacy and experience true pleasure. And yes, she explains the term performative intimacy. She shares so much great info while keeping it light, and we do have our share of laughs. Listen now. Sex, intimacy, pleasure. When was the last time you had that conversation out loud? Many of us are the products of our parents. Money and sex were not to be discussed in polite company, and often not at all if our parents had anything to do with it. The man should take the lead, because anything other than heterosexual coupling was even more taboo, and we should appreciate this wonderful opportunity to conceive. Okay, we got over a lot of that last part by ourselves. But initiation, I'm glad you're smiling, but initiation and communication and pleasure, well, some of us still have a few hang-ups there. My guest today uses the term performative intimacy and time-poor women in her profile. I'm going to believe that time-poor women perform the act just to get it over with, not perform with costumes and toys. I'm sure she'll set us straight. As we age, we also undergo physical and physiological changes that make sex a pain, literally. I listened to Chloe's podcast episode, 15 Relationship Habits to Change Now to Increased Intimacy and Sex, and so many of her points were pertinent to long-term couples, which you might be one of. She knows we're boomers, so well aware of our older bodies and the habits that come with many years with the same person. I hope I ask the questions you're hoping I do. Chloe Mascord, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here. And that is, I think, has to be the best intro I've ever experienced on a podcast recording. And I've done a few. So you made me smile and giggle, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's funny because I try to focus on my intro notes, and I could see your big grin, and I'm going like, I'm not quite sure what I just said, but whatever. That's great. We're going to jump right in. What is performative intimacy?
Yeah, so I think this, if we track back, this comes from where we've learned about intimacy and sex. And I think we can, most of us can say that it's come from movies. And I think as you would expect from an actor or an actress, they perform. And so I think when we're looking at intimacy and sex, we are represented with people showing us what it should look like. And I think we've adopted those behaviors from noises that are made to ways in which we physically show up and the connection that we have with our partner and what we're doing for their pleasure. So when I talk about performative, I'm talking about how we're actually physically showing up in intimacy.
Okay. And therein lies the difference, because when we were young, oftentimes, you know, it was quite risque to even see a nude person, let alone sex on the big screen. So yeah. Now, at this age, many women have been with their partners for a long time. What are the most common reasons desire fades in long-term relationships, and how do these couples reignite it?
Yeah, great question. There's always a few reasons why this can happen. And I think everyone, and I want to highlight here that everyone's unique to their own situation. There could be a multitude of different things. I'll name a few.
I have a list too, so I'm curious.
Great. So I think it's really important to highlight that we go through different stages in our lives. And I love that your focus is around the boomer stage, because obviously that is, you know, a really pivotal part of our lives. And I want to acknowledge that, because that's the audience that I'm talking to today. So I think a big piece of the puzzle is these changes in our life. So it might be having kids, it might be, you know, getting married or things like that. So different stages of our lives can change how we show up in relationships and intimacy. And that includes changing sexual desires as well. And I think a lot of the time we don't talk about how we used to have intimacy with our partner can be different to how we want it now. And I don't think that we've really created a space to acknowledge that what we want from our partner physically and emotionally can actually change multiple times throughout our relationship. And so the way that we used to be intimate with our partner is no longer relevant, and it actually doesn't light us up the same way. And so I think that can often be the case. Why that happens can be health issues. It can be communication barriers. It can be additional caregiver responsibilities for people in our life. It can be lack of energy. It can be menopause. It can be fatigue. It can be multiple different things. But I think it's important that we acknowledge that what we want, or, you know, even mismatched desire, you know, one partner might want intimacy or sex one way and the other partner might want it another. So they're normally the things that can come up. And, you know, health, menopause, hormonal changes are big as well. But yeah, it can depend on the individual.
Yeah, I know on my list, I went everything from the same old, which is boredom, to a fact to life that, take this in the vein in which it's meant, a young person might not be quite as aware of, is disinterest in the relationship itself. Gray divorce is at an all-time high, you know, so it's just like, can I just want to avoid this whole situation?
Yeah. You mean like in a relationship, we get to a certain point where the whole relationship is not giving us the fulfillment that we want. And, you know, that's, I'm really glad you highlighted that, because that is something that a lot of people will come to me needing support with. Initially, it will be about they're not satisfied with the intimacy. But what I often see, and I can say in basically all of my clients to date, underneath that is an issue in the relationship. What that issue is different for everyone. But it can often be a lack of communication. It can be, I don't feel seen and heard. It can be, I'm not able to verbalize that I'm not feeling the desire for intimacy. So it's normally not the surface issue that's presented. It's often relational. And I want to talk to my own experience just for a moment here, because even though, well, I turned 38 yesterday, but even though I'm not in this age bracket, I can share an experience I've had around low libido. And, you know, for somebody who's a little bit younger, it's becoming more and more prevalent for different reasons. Distractions are one of those reasons. But what I will say in my experience and what I've come across in low libido across the board is it is often not just health. It can be unresolved conflict in relationships, which was the case for me. Also, it was my body sending me a message that something wasn't right in the relationship, that something's not in alignment. And in my case, it was, I didn't feel safe to be me. I didn't feel comfortable to be me in that relationship. And ultimately, it was the wrong relationship for me. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be the case for people listening, but often what will happen is when we feel stagnant in a relationship or in intimacy, it can actually be our body telling us that there's something we need to pay attention to. And that might be, maybe we're not putting in the time and effort into our relationship. We're not watering it. We're not communicating our desires. We're not in touch with our own experience. We're not giving ourselves time to really discover who we are, because that changes and evolves. And if we haven't done it before, it's really difficult to start, you know, in those later years. So I do think whilst what we're talking about in the boomer space, a lot of it can relate to different generations, but maybe in a slightly different way. And I think it's important we do touch on at some point today the boredom piece, because I think that can definitely come up in long-term relationships, in particular if you've been together like 10, 20, 30 years. That's definitely something that can be prevalent.
Well, we might as well go there now. Although I will say, as I was writing my notes, is like, you know, I'd put down something specific and I'd go, okay, root cause, no communication. Next thing, root cause, poor communication. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, which once again, boredom. Mm-hmm. Talk to me, talk to each other, whatever. Okay, go with boredom.
Yeah, okay. Give me an example. So I'm bored with the type of intimacy we have, or, you know, what have you seen come up or heard maybe from friends or someone like that, just so I can maybe paint a more specific picture?
Well, I mean, you know, once again, going back decades, I shouldn't even say this. If this person ever listens, they're going to be horrified. We called this person Mr. Missionary.
Yep.
You know, so same position. That's all they want to do. No variations on a theme. And it's just like, oh, you know, and you can practically, it's one of those movies that you do see where she's yawning and checking her watch.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like that sort same of thing. Thing, different day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what a lot of people come to me and say is, I just don't like sex anymore. I'm over it. It's not my thing. I'm just not interested. And I'm okay with that. I'm quite fine with not having desire for intimacy anymore. And so my challenge to that is it that you don't like having sex, or is it that you don't like the type of sex that you're having? And I think this pertains to exactly what you're mentioning now. So I think what happens is we get to a point where we've let it go for so long, or we've let it go for a period of time, that we no longer, you know, we're in this awkward stage now where we've maybe been unsatisfied for a long time, but we haven't actually spoken up about it. And so I think a way to combat that is to get curious. And I'm a huge advocate for this, regardless of whether or not you're early stages or late stages. Curiosity is a big piece of the puzzle when it comes to maintaining a healthy intimate life. And so things like getting to know somebody and treating the situation as if you're being a tourist, not a tour guide. Because I think we make a lot of assumptions when we've been with somebody for so long. We think, oh, I know them so well. I've got this. I don't need to be curious anymore because, you know, I know them. So when we change our mindset around it and start to be curious and ask our partner questions, because I know most people like to be asked questions too, it can actually open up this opportunity to get to know our partner with a different approach. And a way to do that is if you, for example, when we can share some links in the notes, there's a lot of different cards. So essentially like a partner game where there's these questions that you can ask each other, and you pull a card out of the deck, and it can be relating to, you know, family. It can relate to intimacy. It can relate to past, present, future. And so there's all these different types of questions that we can start to ask our partner. And you know what I find with this is couples that have been together for like 30, 40 years start to go, oh, I didn't know that about my partner. And it actually starts to create this spark or like little glimmer of a passion that we maybe didn't have before, where we feel like, oh, wait, we actually don't know everything about our partner. And I think that's a really good place to start, is to start to be curious. And if you don't want to come up with your own questions, using a card deck, like a connection card deck, is a really cool way to, you know, you just block out maybe half an hour and you ask each other maybe one question or two questions from each of the categories and just see how you feel after. And maybe just do it once a week and just see how you feel after. And you'll be really surprised that there is probably still a lot you don't know about your partner, or that you thought you knew, or that they did believe, you know, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, that has actually changed and evolved since then.
I really like the idea of that deck of cards, because it takes the pressure off. I'm not asking this weird question. It's the question I pulled.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Are we allowed to stack the deck?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and that sort of leads into to another question I did want to ask, that, you know, when couples have been together for decades, communication habits have formed. So, like, finishing each other's sentences may be cute when you're talking about your last cruise, but it's not very helpful when trying to get something important across. You know, answering the question before the other person has finished asking it, that really ends a discussion. And then, of course, there's the old, we'll talk about that later, which is just, you're dismissed. As I say, the cards are such a great way then to, you sort of took the wind out of my sails, I think, because I was going to ask sort of a safe way to open the doors to conversation. But what else do you suggest?
Yeah, I love that you mentioned about the communication. And I do, in a lot of the content I share, I bang on about communication. But what I've started to notice lately is, as much as my focus is communication, what I'm guilty of, and I think, and I don't want to generalize as women, but, you know, I'm going to use this as an example, is we love communication, right? However, where I think I can improve, and many of my clients can improve, is listening. Because what you're talking about here is finishing each other's sentences, and I am guilty of that. I'm guilty of that. And I see a lot of people doing the same thing. But what I think is a really even more powerful skill to have is to actually listen to somebody. And when I say listen, I don't just mean listen to respond. I mean listen to understand. And that, you know, there's ways to do this. There's a great clip that Simon Sinek has. It's called The Art of Listening. And I want to link that in the show notes as well. It's just a short little clip, but it talks about how imperative it is to learn that skill. Because the power of your partner feeling heard is even more so than being able to communicate well. If you can listen and genuinely listen, and this isn't just in your relationship, this is everywhere in life, what you will get back in return and what you'll start to see will radically change. Because a lot of the time when we're finishing somebody's sentence, what they are going to say could actually very much be different to what you think they're going to say. And therefore they just go, oh, I'm not even going to bother. I'm not even going to bother anymore. And I think by being able to be very good at listening, your communication will naturally become better purely just by practicing the skill of listening. And then, of course, there's ways that we can communicate better. One thing I really like to do, and a habit that I've now incorporated into my relationship, is a weekly check-in. And so for those couples that are maybe not communicating well, and when just sweeping things under the rug, in particular things that maybe they'd like to be different, it's just not worth the argument. They don't want to have the conversation. A really good way to start to incorporate a safe space to talk about positive and also things that they'd like to be different is a weekly check-in, where you start with, let's talk about, you know, three things that we're really happy with that's going well this week in our relationship. And they can be really minor, can be like, I really love how you acknowledged me for doing this, or I really loved how you came and grabbed me around the waist the other day. Just little things. And then in the middle, we then talk about things that we would like to improve. So what is something that we would like to improve? Okay, well, one person might say, I would like us to have the quantity of intimate moments to be higher, meaning like I'd like to have a little bit more kissing, or I'd like us to lean into hand holding, or I'd like us to go on a date. So it's just little things that we would like to change or improve. And then we end it with, what is something we're grateful for in our relationship, so that we've got this space every week where we can share in a safe space things that we would like, that we love, things that we'd like improve, and then things we're grateful for, so that we're getting in the habit of communication. And so then we don't need to wait until there's a disagreement and then things just come out, you know, in the heat of the moment that we've been holding on to because we just don't want to have the difficult conversation. And this is really interesting because in particular for people that slip into that people pleasing or like, you know, conflict avoidance, this is a really good way to start practicing feeling more comfortable with talking about challenges that we're experiencing. And it can be clunky, really clunky at first. And it's the same with intimacy. Intimacy can be clunky and that's normal. But the more you practice it, the more you're actually creating safe spaces for communication in your relationship.
As you're speaking, I'm thinking that, you know, like at this age, so many people are trying to figure out the retirement picture. Like, what is that going to look like? What do I want to do? What haven't I done? Where can I make an impact? That sort of thing. But instead of looking at it sort of big picture, to take it within the couple, within the relationship, and really discuss on a more intimate level. So not big, you know, change the world kind of stuff, but with and keeping it gentle and keeping it about yourself. So there's no accusation to the other person of you never do this. It's just I would like this, or I'm uncomfortable with something, whatever it is.
I love that you mentioned that about the retirement space, because that is, you know, that is a real test for a relationship, because you've gone from your day-to-day life being a certain way and then all of a sudden it's shifted. The way I look at it is, and this is the same approach I normally take with menopause, because this is another transitional period in our lives. And so a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, this is how it is. And there seems to be quite a lot of negative connotation around it, because there's a lot of negative body changes and hormonal shifts and weight gain and all of these different things that can happen during this transitional period. But what I like to do is to frame it as an opportunity for self-discovery. And I think in particular with retirement, you're about to have all of this time to be able to do and spend on things that you love to do. And so this is a really interesting way for you to, again, harness this curiosity and to discover, what do I like? Who am I? And lean into trying new things. And what this does when you go on this, you know, we start to try new things and start to have this new lease at life, and you know, whether it's pickleball or whether it's, you know, learning a skill like pottery or something. And I just got goosebumps, the passion and the attractiveness that can come from watching your partner start to try something new and start to, you know, lean into a passion or a hobby is actually creates quite a bit of chemistry in a relationship naturally. And that's not even the reason why we do it. Your reason can be, I really just want to try something new, and I really just want to lean into to trying different things to find what it is that I like. And when your partner witnesses you, you know, doing these new things, it's like, oh, okay, I didn't know that, or like, this is a little unpredictable. And I think that's good. I think that's a really good thing for a relationship, is to lean into newness and do it for yourself, not for the relationship, but as a byproduct, what that can do for the relationship is only positive things.
Okay, I'm going to tell everybody that when you're finished listening to this episode, go find, and I don't, have you seen the movie, is it Ghost, with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore?
Yeah. Oh, the pottery scene.
that's instantly where, when you said, oh, pottery, and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Well, staying on that whole retirement piece too, is that if you are not going out to a 9 to 5, I don't know, I'm going to do a little bit of stereotyping here, but often when you're young, it is about the sex and it's hot and it's steamy. But as you get older, intimacy can play a bigger role without the actual sex act.
You know, it's interesting you say this because I started out as a sex coach, right? And what I realized very quickly was, okay, great. So people come to me with a sex-related challenge. What I've realized that we're not educated on is intimacy at all. Like, we are not taught about intimacy. And that's why now, even more importantly, I educate around intimacy because sex is sex, and then intimacy is the glue that binds sex to relationship. And so, what intimacy looks like for each individual is an opportunity for us to explore what is intimacy for us? What is it that we can create? How can we create intimacy so that it can lead to sex? And I think, even though, yes, it's relevant to your audience, it's relevant to everyone. Because if we don't have intimacy, it's very difficult to have fulfilling sex, in particular for women. If they're not feeling this intimate connection and emotional connection with their partner, it's very difficult to have fulfilling and enjoyable sex. So it plays a vital role in our relationships, and it's a really beautiful opportunity to discover what is it that makes you feel that intimate connection with your partner. And it's about binding it all together. And how do we bring intimacy into the sex and in back into the relationship, and kind of marrying it all together, rather than it being like relationship, intimacy, sex. You know, they're all fluid and they're all together. It's just, we need to understand ourselves and what we like and what fills our cup. And once we do that, then we can, blend it with our partner and find what works for them and work out a way that we can have what we want in the same relationship. And that's an art, but it starts with us understanding ourselves first. And then we can go on that curiosity journey of what our partner also wants.
So, we're so far off my notes. Somewhere in my notes, I do have the comment about toys and how, like, I've been to those parties. The person presenting is so knowledgeable about what they're presenting. But where I'm going to go with this, we can get to toys later, is all the fabulous massage oils and stuff like that. And maybe I'm just confessing my own little thing here, but like to get into a really nice, oh yeah, you just rolled your shoulders too. A nice massage situation with a really nicely scented oil or something. What a great way to begin that whole intimacy journey.
Love that you said that. And I think so many of us take quite a while to warm up into the space, right? For men, when we're talking about sex and intimacy, they can transition into sex very quickly. Whereas as women, we need that warm up. We need that sensual touch, that slowness sometimes, not always, but we often do. And that can involve a massage. It can involve soft touching. It can involve creating this space of beautiful safety and connection first for us to then melt into the experience. And I think that it's important that we don't just look at, the end goal, that we look at the build up. It might start with flirtation in the morning, that flirty kind of energy with each other, and maybe that touch around the waist, or that wink or something like that. We as women really like that build up. We like that journey to sex. And one way to do that is that physical massage, because it relaxes our body and we can just get into the space and we can start to really just forget about our to-do list and forget about all these things that we need to do.
I think too, I work with a lot of much older people, and I know one woman that after her nap, I always say, oh, let me brush your hair. Well, I mean, she just melts into that. Like, just yes. You can just see everything relax, and she closes her eyes. And, you know, so something is simple. You know, I think people tend to overlook the obvious or the simple. But I don't know. You look like you got long hair. I used to have hair down to my butt for 30 years. I would love someone to give me a nice hair. Yeah, there you
Same.
Go. Yeah.
I love that you said about the hairbrushing thing. I get my partner to brush my hair. So I'm like, oh, it's so relaxing. It's just melt. It's you're right. It melts you. And I think when we know ourselves and we know what makes us melt, it's a really beautiful thing. It's you know, it might not be the hairbrushing. It might be, you know, just a nice rub on the shoulders, or it might be our, you know, being patted on there, or the hand massage. Absolutely. And this is, you know, an invitation for us to just try a few different things. What is it that makes you melt? What is it that makes you just your shoulders to drop and your body to just relax? Because that's a beautiful thing to experience. And if you can, you bring your partner into that space of like, could you just massage my hands while we sit on the couch and watch our show together? And that itself can create a beautiful intimate connection too.
This isn't going to be a podcast episode. It's all going to be about Agnes and Chloe and what makes them feel good. Oh, dear. I am going to just go sideways a little bit. In my generation, I think we started out thinking that men know all about sex. They know what to do, as though he's born with innate knowledge. But, you know, as I say that, it's like kind of foolish because it suggests that all us women are the exact same. Does that still exist where women sort of think, oh, he'll know what to do?
Absolutely. There is definitely this expectation that women have that he should know what to do. And that's a really dangerous place for a relationship, is these expectations. And the reason I say that is because every woman is different. So even if he used to know what to do, and not only that, but like, from one minute to the next, so many women I work with change their mind. You know, one intimate encounter might be one way, and the next intimate encounter, they might want it another way. And this expectation for our partner to be a mind reader is not serving. And that's where the communication piece comes in. It's like being able to express, hey, this is what I would like. But there is a big expectation on men to just know. And we're all, you know, even in our anatomy is all very different in women. Yes, you know, in the whole scheme of things, it's the same, but each woman is unique in how they look physically, in how they, what brings them pleasure. And I think we really need to be mindful that expecting our partner to just know what feels good for us is it's not fair, and it's not going to get our needs met either.
Well, and once again, I keep on having these thoughts as you're talking, but you know, what worked for your last partner may not work for this one. Just because you aced it last year doesn't mean you're acing it this year. You know, you still gotta talk. And I'm trying to leave the genders right out of that. It's a two-way street.
Absolutely.
Now, you opened this up, and somewhere, I'm just going to scroll down here, is the fact that as we get older, I'm just talking from a woman's point of view. Some of my body parts have slipped. I have gained weight. A lot of women just don't want to get naked in front of a man anymore. What do we do about that, or what do the fellas do about it?
Yeah, I love that you raised this, because this was something that I was thinking about in particular for this, you know, for this audience. So I think when we talk about, you know, many boomer women growing up in an era where these rigid beauty standards and limited body positivity messages, and even now, you know, like that's still the case now in a different way. But what it can do is at the aging can also amplify these body image challenges. And we're still in a society where youth is what we as women are being trained to achieve or trained to aim for. And so we feel this pressure to age gracefully while also trying to grapple with these physical changes. And I think it is really important for us to just acknowledge that. I think we need to acknowledge that we're in a society where that is still the case. And it really makes me, it makes me sad, because it shouldn't be like that. There is so much wisdom and beauty that comes with aging. And I hope in my life I can see that shift massively. I can see shifts, but I don't think it's at the point where youth isn't still what we're striving for. So I want to acknowledge it, because I don't think it's fair for us to just sweep that under the rug. But what I want to say is, what I have experienced in this space is the confidence is what is most attractive. So regardless of how we look, if what people in general, and I've seen a lot of research around this, is what people find the most attractive is confidence. And that confidence is not bound by age, and it takes time, and I get it. But if we're doing things in our day-to-day life that bring us joy and bring us pleasure and make us feel good in our body, and we're, you know, we're fueling our body in a beautiful way, and we're doing things not for the external change but for to feel good, whether that be a yoga class or a Pilates class or a walk, you know, with our friends, or, you know, sitting down for a meal with people we love, those things create a sense of joy in our lives. And when we start to feel that confidence lift internally, and we don't base our worth on our external, that confidence that we have will start to take away from it being about what's on the outside. And that goes for any age, but I understand it's in particular as we age. I get that and I acknowledge that. But if we start to remove the validation that we are programmed to be external, and we start to say, my worth isn't bound, and this might be affirmations that we need to start telling ourselves, my worth is not bound by how I look. My worth is bound by who I am, and the values that I hold, and the woman that I am, and what I bring to the world. And when we start to really believe that within ourselves, that's where this beautiful confidence can come from. And when our partner sees that confidence, it's an extremely attractive quality, and it's going to, you know, have this positive snowball effect. But I think it's important to really acknowledge that this is still a society we're in, but we still have the power to make to have confidence, even though that's what we're surrounded by on a day-to-day basis.
I think too, you know, like if as a 70-year-old I'm going to start looking for a 35-year-old, I mean, I've got lots of jokes about being a cougar, that's okay, you know, like I will have greater self-consciousness about my current body, yeah, than if I'm with a person who is a closer age, because, yeah, you know, like right now we're just talking heterosexual, but like a man's body does the same thing. The skin does the same saggy bits, and they've probably gained a bit of weight and all that sort of stuff. So it's, you know, we make it about us because we're so self-conscious, yeah, but you know, it's the same on both sides of that coin.
I agree with you. I think there is a lot more space held for men aging. And I think there's also this positive association with, you know, the silver fox, you know, a little bit of grays is more attractive, or wisdom. It comes with wisdom. So, but I agree with you, because, you know, there's women out there that go, I'm not physically attracted to my partner. So it does go both ways. But I think, you know, it comes down to how we approach it and what's our mentality around it. And if, you know, both partners in a relationship are focusing on their physical health, it's also a beautiful thing for a couple to do, you know, going on walks together and doing things that make us feel good in our body, and having that as part of our relationship. It's like this, you know, nice little positive momentum that you've got going for us to have this focus on health and wellness together, so that we're, you know, our bodies are still thriving, and that we're grateful for what our bodies have done and got us to the place in our life that we're in now, rather than looking at it as, you know, oh, my body doesn't look great, or it's not the same as it used to be. Because it's carried us through so much in our lives. And if we can be really grateful for that, then there's no space for the focus to be on body image. Do you know what I mean? So if it's like we replace that space and replace that story with something that's, you know, I'm actually really grateful that I've gotten to this place in my life, you know, maybe without any serious health issues or without major health issues, or I've bounced back from a major health issue. You can't have them coexist. So if we feel the thoughts as positive and gratitude, then the other ones can't coexist.
I think too, we take great pride in like the gray. I earned the gray. You know, the lines, whether they're laugh lines or frown lines or whatever, each and every one of them tell a story.
Yes.
But as soon as we get below the neck, it's like, don't look, turn off the lights, you know, like,
Right.
So I guess, yeah, we just need to extend the same grace below the neck as we extend above the neck.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And where a good focus for this is, find parts of your body that you love, right? And there's always going to be the ones we don't like, no matter what age, that we're like, ugh, I hate that part. But if we start to focus on things, you know what? I'm actually really happy with that part of my body. I feel really good. And it might be something like your calves, you know? Like it might just be, oh, I love my calf. I have really nice muscular calves, or I have really beautiful feet. It might be something small. But if we focus on a part of our body that we're like, oh, I think that's a really, you know, attractive or beautiful part of my body. And that's that, where our energy goes in that positive way is good. And you can start to feel proud of that part and be like, oh, I like that part of me. I find it quite sexy and attractive. And then, you know, we're not focusing on, I hate that part. I hate that part of my body.
I'm trying really hard not to do the yeah, but. Because when you're talking about...
Please.
You know, you were talking about finding a part of your body. Well, I've always had slender ankles, and when I was wearing like 4 or 5 inch heels, they look great. I still have those slender ankles, but I also have English knees, you know, so I mean, it's like, keep that skirt wrapped real tight around the legs. You can just look at my ankles. Sorry.
No, I get it. I hear you, because it's like the positive and then immediately, but I don't like the positive, I immediately don't like. And it's patterning. It's just what we've done. So it takes time to reprogram that mentality. I think we really also need to address here, where are we getting these stories from? Is it media? Is it TV? Is it social media? What is fueling this, you know, society? It's hard to get away from these stories, right? These beauty standards. I get it. But what I have found is even the smallest things, by being really conscious of who you're following, really conscious of if you are consuming content or media, whether it be on TV or magazines, just really think about what it is that you're consuming. Because even though you might not see it at the time, those little stories compile and compile and compile. And so what I find is, you know, if we start to consume media, whether it be, you know, social media accounts of people who are similar to us, or then we're not using comparison to people that are in a different bracket. And I understand that's hard with Facebook because we've got friends of all different ages and genders and all of that. I get that. But even just if there's certain, you know, comparisons that we're drawing between ourselves and other people, why? Where is that coming from? What are the things that are accelerating those comparisons? And let's start to actually remove them so that it's not activating those stories.
I can take another left turn here. I opened by saying that as we get older, physical and physiological, such that sex can be painful.
Yeah.
Can you go there with, I guess intimacy will help. I mean, having that longer runway, but that's where to, you know, looking at assistance like oils and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, these are physical discomforts. And that's where it's like, no wonder, you know, there might not be a desire for intimacy because there's pain, and that's really difficult and it's common. And I think I like what you mentioned about the oil. You know, lubricants are really important during this period of time, really important. And if you haven't been open to doing that or using lubricants before, it can be like, oh, I'm doing it because I have to, not because it's, you know, I want to. But I think it's really important to start to take note of, you know, when, if the pain is always there, understanding where the pain's coming from and why the pain's happening, because there's often some health complications that can come from it. It can be menopause, it can be aging, it can be all sorts of different things. But sometimes because of this transition, it actually is due to stress. So we want to just be mindful of, you know, taking note when I feel these physical challenges or this pain, where, when am I feeling it? What is it that helps to reduce the pain? Is it lubricant? Is it taking time to build up? Is it, you know, having that connection with my partner prior to? It's finding the things that help alleviate the pain, and also being mindful that if the pain is there, it is really important to go and see somebody about it and just make sure that there isn't any underlying health complications there. But there are definitely things you can do to alleviate that and be more aware of it, because at the end of the day, we can go and, you know, give our power to somebody to tell us what's wrong with us. But if we continue to tap into our body and listen to our body, it will tell you what's going on. And if you start to be more mindful of, when am I experiencing this pain and what is amplifying the pain and what is reducing the pain, then you can start to uncover that within yourself and know, okay, well, it's when there isn't any lubrication, or when, you know, we're going straight into the act of sex and there's no buildup, or, you know, when I've got stress, or when I'm feeling insecure within my body and my whole body tenses up. You know, those things can amplify the pain that we experience. So when we start to take some data and we start to be mindful, and this might be journaling, okay, I noticed this time that this is what happened. What was it that came up for me during the day? Or what were my physical experiences? What were my emotional experiences? So that we can start to just join the dots. And we can start to be like, okay, I'm seeing that the pain is showing up when I'm feeling quite insecure in my body. Okay, so that might mean that my body is quite tense. So what is it? You know, is it the, coming back to the hairbrushing? Do I need my hairbrush? You know, what are the things I can do for my body to help, you know, help alleviate maybe some of this pain and be like, oh, okay, I feel connected with my body. My body's telling me that maybe I do need to lean into this or do some more calming activities that are going to help reduce the pain. But yeah, I think really getting that information and data is going to be really pivotal.
We've been talking about women's aging bodies. But as we said, men age also.
Yes.
And many older men have problems, difficulty with erections. Mm-hmm. A lot of those men, they take it far too personally and don't want to discuss it.
Yeah.
If, as a woman, we are fully happy with just the intimacy, do you have any suggestions for starting that conversation to make them sort of relax and say, understand that it's okay?
Yeah. So are you talking about how to navigate this difficult period? Let's say that the couple or one person wants to maintain sex, but they're going through this difficult time. Is that your question?
Well, no, I was just more thinking that, you know, often women, as they get older into their 70s and 80s, they're quite happy not to have the actual sex act. Mm-hmm. But they really, really like that whole intimacy and touch and
yeah.
all that stuff. So if a man cannot get an erection, mm-hmm. instead of popping little blue pills,
yeah,
then they can just enjoy the touch. And once again, you know, we talked about massage for we the women, but you know, for him as well, you know, absolutely. It doesn't have to be an erection and penetration.
Absolutely. There's two things that I want to talk about here. One, I really want to talk to, you know, leaning into this intimate space and how important it is to find ways to connect and have that deep connection in relationship if for whatever reason sex is off the table or is something that you're both very comfortable not doing. But I reiterate, it has to be something both people are comfortable not doing. Because if one person is just, you know, not comfortable and the other person is desiring that, that can create some challenges. But I also think, you know, I unless you're both comfortable with taking sex off the table, don't give up if it becomes something that you go through a period of not desiring. I don't want to see people just going, oh no, I'm just at that age, it's not appropriate for me anymore. You know, I'm a believer that everyone deserves pleasure and that pleasure can look different, right? And I would hate to think that we've just accepted that. Because, you know, we should continue to experience pleasure, whether that's sexual or intimately, at any age. And what worked before might not be working now, but it doesn't mean nothing works. So I also want to talk to the erectile dysfunction because this is really interesting. There's so much like default to the blue pill, default to fix, problem, solution. And what I'm noticing more and more is that is where when even younger men, right, even younger men that experience erectile dysfunction or challenges around that, it is a really important, it's a very uncomfortable topic, but I think low libido is becoming something more and more common for men and not health related. But what people often do, in particular, you know, men don't want to talk about low libido. They would rather just accept that there's a problem with erectile dysfunction than to genuinely talk about not having desire for sex. Because as a man, there is this expectation for men to always be ready and men to always be open to it. And so even as we age and get older, I think it's really important, again, with the communication, to really understand that just because somebody's older doesn't mean that that's automatically just an age issue. It could genuinely just be, you know, men experience body image issues too. And that is a huge key to low libido at any age is, you know, I don't look the same as I used to do. I used to. And therefore that part of our, you know, that part of us shuts down. And so that erectile dysfunction may not actually be age. It may just be I'm struggling to overcome this period of my life, this new body or this body that's changing that I'm not used to. So I really want to reiterate here is it seems that we just, especially as we, you know, we're in this boomer generation, we just go, oh, that's just part of aging. I challenge that and I say, don't default to that for women or men. Don't default to just being, my body is failing. This could be something that we're perceiving about ourselves. Oh, I just don't like the, you know, I don't like the way I look. Could be actually playing a bigger role in your libido or in your desire for intimacy or sex than what you actually realize.
A whole bunch of people are smiling right now.
Good.
That's great. I want to touch on one more thing before we start to wrap. You talked about women faking orgasms. I'm sure we've all done it. Not me, but I mean, no. Why do we do that?
Yes.
I have another list here, so I'm going to see if I'm here or not.
The reasons why? Have you got a list of the reasons? Yes. Great. Yeah. Okay. So interesting. I just did a keynote speech on faking orgasms on Saturday. And this is a really interesting topic because 80% of us have faked an orgasm at some time in our life. So that's majority, right? And that's the people that are willing to admit that they faked it. So I mean,
I was going to say 80%, the other 20% don't want to admit
it. Yeah, I know, right? Absolutely. So what I found, so I've worked with a lot of clients who have struggled with being open and transparent about their pleasure or even knowing what brings them joy. It is never one reason. It is always multiple. Never one. It's not just like, you know, I want it to be over. That's it. There's always multiple things that contribute to this. And there's so many different reasons why, you know, ingrained habit. You might just do it once in one situation and then it just becomes a habit. It might be, I want to speed this situation up. It might be, I don't want to hurt my partner's feelings. It might be, I don't like the way my body looks. There might be multiple stories happening at once. And what I encourage people to do is, again, this comes back to a communication thing. So as you can see, there's a trend here. But what I say is, you know, no wonder if you're needing to fake intimacy and pleasure, no wonder if you're needing to do that, of course you're not going to enjoy it because it's not real, you know, it's not, you're not actually enjoying it. And I'm sure so many of your listeners have seen the movie When Harry Met Sally, you know, that scene.
I think I mentioned that in my notes here somewhere. I want what she's having.
I want what she's having. Which, and that's the thing. She's not even having a real orgasm. It's a performance, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But she's so good at the fake orgasm that we're like, oh, you know? And that's the whole messaging there, right? Is that we are trying to replicate what it looks like. And that's another reason why people fake it, is because they're like, when I do experience orgasm, it doesn't look like that. And so therefore it's like, I feel uncomfortable or insecure experiencing that because it's not the same. So there's a variety of reasons why we do it, but this comes back to us knowing ourselves and living more authentically in who we are. And that changes and evolves over time. And I'm so passionate about helping people find their true authenticity, their true pleasure, and let that be ever evolving, because it doesn't need to be, oh, I've found my pleasure and that's it now, you know? And we're not striving for the orgasm. That's just a metaphor I really like to focus on, because, you know, people go, oh, okay, you know, faking the orgasm is actually really, we're faking pleasure. We're faking what we're enjoying. And that's really confusing for somebody else. You know, they're like, oh, well, you know, I've been doing the same thing and you seem to enjoy it. And we're so good at faking orgasms that our partner's like, hang on, what? Yeah.
And then they're crushed. Then they don't believe that you haven't faked it every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I did a radio interview the other week and it was about faking orgasms. And one of the radio presenters was male. And I was asking them, what do you think the statistics are around this? And, you know, they said like, you know, 30% or something like that. And I was like, no, 80%. And he's like, oh, it wouldn't be me. And I was like, really? like, okay. And that's the thing. People, you know, people really do genuinely believe, oh, no, it won't happen to me. You know, it's not, whereas we're doing a disservice to ourselves, but we're also doing a disservice to men. And we're doing a disservice to other women because everyone's just playing this game of, like, you know, not actually sharing what we love and what fills our cup. And maybe we don't know. That's another big reason. I actually don't know what feels good for me. So how am I supposed to communicate that with my partner? I just want them to know, but I don't know.
We've hit on some of my reasons. One of the reasons was to make the guy feel amazing. Yes. Feel like he's amazing.
To float his ego, you know, because that's exactly what we're told to do. You know, he has to feel good. It's, you know, our job to make him feel good about himself. He's done a really good job.
Yeah, right. Put a little medal on that bare chest.
Yes.
Ah, dear. What haven't we talked about? What haven't I asked you that you want older women to think about, remember, consider, whatever? If, especially now, they've listened to us for almost an hour. If they're intimacy curious, now that they've listened to us.
I think it's really, really important that we give ourselves grace, that we haven't learned about sex, what we haven't learned about sex and intimacy by now. I think we really put a lot of pressure on ourselves that we should know, sex, that we should know intimacy, that we should know what feels good. And you know what? You know, in my generation, I feel like I knew next to nothing. But in generations before me, knew less, even less. And it was,
which is why we were such lousy teachers for your generation.
And holding space for that, right? You know, I hold so much space for that. And, you know, even mental health and all sorts of things, it just wasn't a thing. You know, even a few generations ago, it was not spoken about at all. Giving ourselves grace, you know, that was not something we were taught. And it's okay to have lived with misinformation or no information or limited understanding about pleasure or sexuality or health. We've done the best with the tools that we've had. And it's pretty confronting now with social media and what we're learning, in particular as, you know, we're moving through life. You know, I struggle to keep up with what's going on in the world these days. It's a lot to now understand that there's younger generations coming through that know so much more. But give yourself grace. But there's never, you know, it's never too late to learn. And I hope this conversation has been something that's got us, you know, not feeling ashamed or bad that we should have known this or that, oh, I didn't think about that. But wow. This is something I can learn more about. This is exciting. This is something I can rediscover intimacy. I can rediscover pleasure. I can explore. And that can be exciting as opposed to a reason for us to feel bad or to feel that we should have known more.
There we go. That's perfect. I really like that. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Absolutely. So I have a podcast called Honey-ED, Intimacy Made Easy, which is what we all want, right? We want it to be nice and easy. I keep it simple. I do a lot of interviews, but I also do solo episodes, which are no more than 15 minutes. And I think it's important for us to keep it simple and not be too overwhelming. But in saying that, I also like to have an interview with an expert in a space in intimacy, or even just, you know, a friend or somebody I know that can bring some wisdom or can start to create some conversation around particular topics. I recently spoke to a hormone specialist in the space of perimenopause and menopause. And no matter what age, that is relevant, absolutely relevant. And that was a beautiful conversation. There's also, you know, a recent interview I did a solo episode around motherhood FOMO. So, you know, there's a lot of us, you know, women who don't have kids, or, you know, don't have kids in their lives at the moment that have left the nest or whatever that space may be. But the topics are relevant to any age. So the podcast is great. Or also if you're an Instagram person, I'm thehoneyed.official, or Facebook the same. So I have a website, www.honey-ed.com. And I would love for anyone to reach out and share any information that they would like shared on the podcast. I love to hear from people what they want to know more about in this space, so that I can create content and episodes that are going to help people with the real challenges and experiences that they're going through. So please reach out and connect. I'd love to have more of a chat with anyone that would like to connect.
Well, and thank you for clarifying about your podcast, because I was going to ask if, you know, like if older women can get something, and I didn't mean it in an ageist way. Like I just, you know, if you're talking to those more sexually active, shall we say, and I guess, you know, you talk about time poor women. I think we tend to think of those 40 somethings who are juggling kids and a career and home and, you know, family and aging parent and who knows what else. But that's great. If there's something for everybody, then we will.
Yeah, there absolutely is. No matter what, the key messages underneath are all relevant. And I'm sure there's definitely some things there. You mentioned, what was the episode you listened to?
Oh, 15 habits 15 relationship habits to change now to increase intimacy and sex.
Yeah, plenty in there that would be beneficial.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. May I ask you a personal question before we close?
Sure.
Once again, totally respectfully, do you have clothing sponsors? I mean, whether your picture is in something scanty or casual or those suits on your website.
Those, suits
were that you look fabulous all the time. I mean, is that your own wardrobe or do you have sponsors?
That's my own wardrobe, but I'll tell you something about a silk suit. It feels like pajamas. So once I got one, I was like, right, that's it. These are my new staple, because I feel like I'm wearing silk pajamas.
I never had body envy until I saw you in those suits, the brown one and the white one. It's like, oh man, I want one of those and I want to look that good.
Right.
Speaking of suits, tell us about Harvey and Louie.
Oh, the puppies. Yes, they're so sweet. I've got two lemon beagles. And
I've never heard of lemon beagles. Is that the color?
Yes, they're coloring. Yeah, so they're like a beige and white instead of the tricolor. And they're siblings, and I only ever was going to get one. But then they were there together, and I had to choose one, and I couldn't choose one, so both of them came home. And I love the TV show Suits, and so I named one of the puppies Harvey Specter and the other one Lewis Litt. So if anyone's seen the TV show, they'll understand. And they're just great. They're just full-time entertainment. I can hear them sniffing away underneath the door to my left.
I love the names. My daughter's cat is called Catrick Swayze.
Oh my gosh. From Ghost with the.
Well, just Patrick Swayze, period, you know. So.
Absolutely.
Play on words. There we go.
I love that.
Okay. Your website link is in the show notes, and all of your links are on your page at our website. Mm-hmm. Listeners, I am positive you have thoughts on today's show. I rarely say this, but if you need to use a pseudonym for your comment or question, I'm fine with that. And your email address never shows. So talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. There is a good chance I missed a question you were hoping I'd ask Chloe. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. I know some of this conversation was the fact that talking about sex and intimacy is difficult for us, but it often isn't with your closest gal friends. Go figure. Share it with them, because they may want to ask a question too. Leave stars and reviews where you can. The algorithm goddesses love them. You can support this podcast by buying me a coffee. That cheap option, just the coffee. The link is in the show notes and above Chloe's head on her page at our website. I'm also registered at Substack. It's free to follow there, and you'll get notified every time a new episode is published. Chloe Mascard, thank you for being my guest today and being so open about what is often a taboo subject. Most of us are, or at least have been, sexual beings, and you've reassured us that we can still enjoy intimacy even as we age. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure to be part of a conversation where we're normalizing these topics because it's so important.
It is. Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday. Have a great rest of week.
Thanks so much.
Party! Okay, bye.